Welcome to Banfield. If you have never heard the name Dusty Talavera before, get used to it because she's going to be famous. Dusty is America's brand new hero after risking her life in a heartbeat. When she saw three little children plunge through the ice of this frozen pond in Colorado, time stood still for a brief moment. And did I say little? Because what I really meant to say was really, really little, like ages 4, 6, and 11. They were so little, these children. They did not have the strength to even stay above the surface in that frigid water. Only their little fingers were visible to Dusty as they were wildly grabbing at the crumbling edges of the hole in the ice. But all three were going under. That much Dusty saw. And had Dusty not seen this disaster unfold from her window, those children likely would not be with us today. But she did. And Dusty took off like a rocket. Out onto the ice, she bolted. And despite falling through the ice herself, she pulled each of those three children one by one to safety. Two of the children, the four-year-old and the 11-year-old, were unharmed. The third child, a six-year-old, was not breathing, was not conscious, and had no pulse. Fortunately, Dusty got her out of that pond just in the nick of time, just as these first responders were getting there and could perform CPR today. And this is completely fair to say, miraculously, that little six-year-old girl was released from the hospital. She was walking, she was talking, and she was happy, according to her grateful mom. In this exclusive national interview, I am so happy to be joined now by the woman who made this miracle happen, Dusty Talavera. She saved those three kids in that pond on Sunday, and thank God for her. Wow. Just wow. And she is the one right there in the middle of the two deputies who you also could see on camera as well. Deputy Moulton and Deputy Dillard with us as well. Okay, Dusty, first of all, hallelujah for you. Second of all, the first thing that went through your mind when you looked out the window and you saw what you saw, take me from that moment.
Oh, man, I just, you know, it was just a reaction type thing. I don't think much went through my mind. I just looked out, saw them fall, and I told my husband, let's go. They fell in the water, and that was it. We just ran outside. I mean, there wasn't much going through my mind at all. Just, you gotta save the kids. That was pretty much
it. You're a one in a million. As I understand it, your husband doesn't swim, so that left you to do what you could. Walk me through your thought process as you got to the edge of that thin ice. I mean, we all know what happens when you see thin ice. It means you're going to go through, too. So what did you think, and how did you strategize how to get to those children who were going under?
I mean, I don't think I really thought it completely through. I just started walking on the ice. I mean, it wasn't much of a thought process. It was just kind of like I gotta get there, you know, I gotta get there. And I mean, I got to the edge of the ice, and honestly, I didn't know I was at the edge till I pulled the two kids out, and then the third kid I reached for, but I ended up falling into the water. And so that's when I kind of knew I was at the edge of the ice.
You knew where you were at that point. Listen, Dusty, I'm going to tell you, I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada, where it was minus 37 on Friday. I know what it feels like to go into extremely cold water. I've done it. But for those of us who are viewing right now who don't know, explain exactly what that felt like when you went through the ice and you were almost submerged.
I mean, it was shock. I was shook. I mean, I was submerged in water. I was freaking out a little bit. I mean, but I just knew there was like one mission, and that was to get her out of the water. And so, I mean, it was kind of like a quick reaction. I had to snap back into like reality, and just I had to grab her. And so I was kind of more worried about her than I was me.
Well, Dusty, you're amazing, because I'll tell you, it takes your breath away. I'm sure that's no surprise to you now, having gone through the experience. When you hit cold water like that, You physically can't breathe. Your chest feels like it constricts. And your first thought is, get me out as fast as possible. But you got two of the kids out. And the six-year-old, that was a struggle. Tell me how you got the six-year-old out, because she was under.
Yes, she was. I mean, I was just kind of trying to grab her and pull her up and keep my head above water. And I mean, at one point I tried to go under and push her up, but the water was just so deep that it was impossible. And I mean, I tried to crawl out and turn around and grab her, but I couldn't get out, you know.
So you got a hold of her hand. I mean, it was, if I understand it correctly, her hand was about the only thing you could see at that point. Were you able to just grab it and then pull with all your might?
That was like right before I fell in the water. I could grab her hand, and I did grab her hand, but I fell in. And so at that point, I was holding onto her body and just, I mean, you know, I'm trying to tread the water and keep my head up. And so I was trying to keep her head up, and it was a struggle. I mean, it was just, yeah.
Could you see her face at that point? Could you see that she was unconscious?
I did, yes. And that's what scared me the most is, I mean... she couldn't keep her head up anymore, and that's when I started to like put my hand behind her head and just, you know, but it was almost impossible.
So the next thing that happens is your husband gets your dog leash, and he's able to somehow fashion a way to get that dog leash out of you. Walk me through how you got yourself and that little girl out of that water hole, back up onto the ice and back to safety.
My husband was pretty quick with the dog leash because I have no idea like how quick it came, but it came pretty quick. And there was a brave young man who ended up walking on top of the ice and just kind of throwing me the rope a few feet away. And I grabbed that rope and he pulled me out. I turned around and I grabbed the little girl and I pulled her out. And so that's how we got out.
So were you, I mean, I'm assuming you've got the weight of soaking wet, you know, a soaking wet six-year-old, as well as you soaking wet, and you're sliding across the ice, holding onto the dog leash. The other two kids are already basically at the shore at safety by now. And are they conscious?
Yes, they were at safety and conscious. So.
And so the first order of business would be to figure out if we can save the little girl. At this point, have the deputies arrived, or are they arriving simultaneously?
They were kind of arriving simultaneously. At that point, the crowd at the edge of the pond actually had the little girl, and they were trying to revive her or help her out.
Okay, so this is where I want to bring in Deputy Moulton. So, Deputy Moulton, I want to play for our audience these moments, and I want to bring the sound up full. And then after the tape is over, I want you to walk me through sort of what this was from your perspective as you guys and your body cams, you were arriving on scene and taking in all of this information in real time. So let's watch this moment, the body cam moment, and then I'll ask you something on the other side. Take a look.
Press.
We need airway and everything.
Okay, Deputy Blaine Moulton, let me tell you, for those of us who don't work in your line of work, that is harrowing to watch. Something tells me that this is something you see a lot more than I do. I just want you to take me into your mindset when you got to the edge of the pond and saw that little girl there.
As I was arriving on scene, I saw a gentleman. He flagged me down, and I figured that was a good place to start. I grabbed my AD, ran out there, and when I got to her, it was shocking. Her eyes were wide open, her mouth was open, and she appeared to be lifeless. When I got to her, I checked for a pulse. I didn't have a pulse, and she was extremely cold to the touch. Shortly after, I got there, Deputy Rodriguez showed up and immediately started chest compressions, and I was able to get the AED attached to her and perform life-saving CPR on her. And it's not something we come across very often, but with a lot of the training from Arapahoe County, prepared me for the best outcome.
Well, the best outcome, I think, is what we witnessed on this second body cam moment. And I'll tell you what, it brought tears to my eyes watching the revival of this little girl. So, Deputy Justin Dillard, I want to play this moment. I'm going to ask you something about it on the other side. Let me just take our viewers to the moment where the CPR worked. Take a look at this.
Watch out, back up. Back up. Here we go.
There you go, honey.
All right, sweetheart.
Analyzing heart rate.
All right, sweetheart. There you go.
Wow. I mean, just that's just a remarkable moment. So, Deputy Dillard, that, you know, that's what makes your job worthwhile, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, ma'am. So we end up going to a lot of calls where we see a lot of things that we don't want to see. That being no different on Sunday. So running up and seeing a six-year-old little girl with her eyes open and her face was blue, not breathing and not conscious or responding whatsoever. And then by that moment that you just watched on the body cam, after Deputy Rodriguez had performed numerous rounds of chest compressions, and we were able to get her wet clothes off and the AED on, and Deputy Moulton also gave rescue breaths to see her chest start to rise again. So I know I can speak, you know, on Deputy Moulton's behalf and Deputy Rodriguez. We all three of us have daughters, to see a six-year-old girl on the ground that way, it's hard not to see your own daughter that way. And same thing with South Metro Fire that showed up when they saw. You can hear them as well. We're all dads. We're all just guys. And you see your own kid when you're looking into somebody on the ground that way. So I'm just very grateful that it turned out that way. We do go to a lot of calls where it doesn't. So we're just very, very thankful it turned out this way.
So, Dusty, part of the video of the, you know, what we're looking at with the body cam as the deputies are arriving and jumping out of the car, I think, and you got to get me, you know, up to speed here. I think it's your husband who's running in front of them and showing them where to go. And he's only wearing shorts. And this is Arapahoe County in Colorado, where I'm sure it's freezing cold. Walk me through that whole process.
Yes.
I mean, as far as what he told me, he didn't feel the cold at all. He wasn't even worried about it, you know. He didn't even realize he didn't have a shirt on at the time. So, I mean, he wasn't thinking about himself. He was thinking about the child as well. I mean, it was a team effort.
Dusty, was there any point, because like I said off the top, he doesn't swim, so it was up to you. Was there any point where you thought you might not get out of there?
Not really. I mean, I'm not too good of a swimmer, but I just knew that, you know, they're quick to respond. I mean, once my husband dialed 911, that was I knew I was going to be okay, you know, no matter what happened.
All right. So I'll tell you what. This is just such an incredible story that I just like to see smiles on your faces, deputies, is just one of those things that it just makes my job so much more pleasant, because, you know, in the news business, we don't often get to report on these kinds of results. So I'm so thrilled. And Dusty, I'm going to tell you something. Thank God for you, because there's not a lot of people who would do what you did. This is a weird question, and I don't know if you've pondered it yet, but do you even feel like the hero that the rest of us truly know you are?
I don't really think so. I mean, I would have done it for anybody, and I'd hope that somebody would do it for me or my child if I ever had one. So I don't really think about it like that.
So I do know one thing in some of the videos, Dusty, and you'll know better because this is your community. I saw a sign that was posted at the edge of the pond, you know, warning about like no wading and caution, open waterway. These are kind of summer warnings. But was there any warning anywhere that the ice was thin or to not, you know, walk onto the ice?
I don't believe so. I don't believe. I haven't, if anything, I haven't seen it, you know.
I think I'm seeing in the top right-hand corner of the picture I'm looking at, there might be like a fountain. Is there a fountain in the middle that kept that ice thin in the center of the pond?
Yes.
So there's no chance for that pond to ever get thick ice in the middle if the fountain's still going, correct?
Yep. Correct.
So tell me a little bit about that whole community of apartments and condos. It looks like that they must be just overwhelmed by what happened basically in their backyard.
I think so. I mean, it was so nice. I had a couple kids actually come to my door today and knock on my door and just tell me that they're happy that the little girl's okay and that I'm okay and that, I mean, I would have done it for them. I would have done it for anybody in this community. I mean, it's all about helping people out and spreading love, so.
Well, speaking of spreading the love, that little six-year-old, her dad, Walter Williams, as I understand it, is just off camera. I'm going to ask our cameraman to see if he can work into the shot, Walter Williams, because I want to know what it was like when you first met the parents, of the little girl you saved, Dusty. And Walter, I'd love to know what it was like for you to meet Dusty, who basically saved the life of your little six-year-old girl.
Well, you know, it was Dusty and Dacian and Shemaz and multiple people, the officers, the person who ran and showed them. It was a puzzle of people. So it's no greater feeling for one than the other because everybody played their part in saving my daughter's life. So it was a common goal that everybody was after. So I just thankful for everyone involved.
I'll bet, Walter. And obviously a heroic effort to save all three of those children. But if it weren't for Dusty looking out that window and beelining it and putting herself in danger and going through the ice, she really is like your guardian angel over there. What was it like when you first met her?
It was great. I mean, meeting them all. I mean, it was great. You know, it was like, it's, you can't explain it because the people that acted in such a way to where they wasn't thinking about their own lives, but just the lives of the others is great. And you don't see that a lot of times, like you guys said, you know, the officers in the police department ain't always glorified. So this was a light shed on them and the Arapahoe County Sheriff's that they too cared. And if you hear in the video, you hear more than just trying to do their duty. You hear compassion and, you know, like it was their own child, the love and care and concern. So it was great.
Walter, how is your little girl? And tell me if I'm pronouncing her name right. Is it Zakiya?
Zakiya.
Zakiya. How is Zakiya doing tonight?
Well, look here. She's right here. So. She's doing great. Say
hi. Can she hear me? I don't know if she's got an earpiece in.
No, she don't have an earpiece, but say hi.
Hi.
She said hi.
Walter, can you ask her how she feeling tonight?
I had a stuff.
How you feeling tonight?
Good.
Good. She said good.
She's feeling okay. Can you ask her, Walter, how she feels about Dusty?
How you feel about Dusty and the people that helped you?
Thank you.
She said, thank you.
And Walter, if I'm not mistaken, I think your wife, Tashira, might be a little bit off camera as well. Can she pop in and say hello?
Yeah, she can pop in and say hello. I'll share the mic.
Come on.
Yeah. Just come over.
There she is.
Just listen.
Hey there, Tashira. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine.
I'll bet it's been a day, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Let me ask you a question if I can. As you look over to your right and you see Dusty standing there in the white coat, the woman who raced to that pond and risked her life to pull your little girl out, how do you feel about her right about now?
Really? She's a hero right now. She saved my baby. She tried. It had somebody else to step in, but she tried her hardest to get my baby. And I appreciate her.
I'll bet you are hugging Zakiya real close in the last couple days, right? She's feeling okay, out of the hospital, all good. Is she back to normal, playing, eating, everything?
Yeah, she's to her normal self.
And everything's okay. And
yes,
what do you want to say to the, what do you want to say to those officers off to your right as well, the two who did the CPR and saved Zakiya's life?
The officers, I just want to let them know I appreciate them. I thank them. What for all of them, even her, my baby. I mean, they saved her. And I thank everybody for what they done. Everybody.
You know, Dusty, when you stand there and you see the effect, the emotional impact and the reality of your bravery, it's got to be a lot to process, I'm guessing.
It is. It's honestly, it's just very heartwarming just to meet them and just to see her and just know that she's okay.
And she looks like she's doing great. Have you had a chance for a hug?
A few of them.
It's a nice dry hug, isn't it? Hey, all of you, I cannot thank you enough. Dusty Talavera, Lakanya Zaffa, Deputy Blaine Moulton, Deputy Justin Dillard, Zakiya Williams, Tashira Williams, and Walter Williams. That's a lot of names, but a lot of love all in one group of people. Thank you all. Yes. Thank you, and God bless.
God bless you.
Thank you.
You know, there's nothing like starting off a show with really good news, because you know how it is, right? The news isn't always great. And tonight it really was fantastic. Okay, when we come back, we've been following this story for several days. And we should have been following the story actually for the last 2.5 years. But what we didn't know, we didn't know. And that goes for everybody. The last known location of 7-year-old Harmony Montgomery, a house in Manchester, New Hampshire. But that was more than 2 years ago, and tonight we've got exclusive pictures from inside the home when she was living there. We're going to show you what the missing girl's life was like right before she vanished. Welcome back to Banfield, a house in Manchester, New Hampshire, the central focus of a mystery tonight. It's the last place Harmony Montgomery was ever seen. Back in 2019, when she was only 5. That's when the police were called out there for a welfare check on the little girl. And oh boy, if these walls could talk. When law enforcement and family services left the house that day, they left Harmony behind in that home with her father. And everyone assumed, the authorities, even Harmony's own mom, that she continued living there with her father for quite some time. But now we know that was not the case. Days, maybe weeks, really who knows how long afterwards, Harmony disappeared. But unconscionably, she was not reported missing until just a couple weeks ago. That's more than 2 years. And only then, her mother claims that she grew frustrated with family services and finally contacted the mayor and the police, you know, years later. When no one could find Harmony or the father, the police moved in. And much of their investigation is focused on the outside of the house. But We have seen police tents in the backyard twice as they searched for evidence. And yesterday, the FBI joined in using heating pipes to thaw the ground. But so far, nothing. Tonight, we're switching gears and moving inside the house. For the first time, we can show you these exclusive photos of what the house looked like when Harmony was living there right before she disappeared. These photos were obtained by News Nation's Brian Enten, and he joins me live now. So, Brian, I was looking very closely at those photos. I zoomed in on everything, trying to look for any kind of evidence that a child might be mistreated. But I was actually quite surprised to see a full fridge with cheese and butter and eggs and milk, to see children's toys, to see a children's bedroom. Things were a little in disarray, but I wouldn't say it's one of the worst cases I've seen. What are you hearing about what those photos really mean?
Well, the photos are from October 2019. I know you, Ashley. I'm sure you zoomed in and saw everything. And you're right. They're not particularly alarming on the inside. It is extremely messy. But one thing that you have to look at is the extension cords going throughout the house and the generator outside the house. What we've learned is that the family was squatting inside the house. All of the utilities were cut off to the house, and they were using that small generator to power various things inside that home. And you have to imagine how uncomfortable it must have been in the winter. How were they able to heat the home? And we've also learned that Harmony wasn't in school. She wasn't going to doctor's appointments. The photos you're seeing, she was basically spending all of her time inside that house with no power and no running water.
And it's cold in Manchester, New Hampshire, you know, in the winter. And we should mention, Brian, who knows how long she was actually even in that house. She's been gone and we don't know how long she's been gone for. So the whole notion of her not going to school might be something quite more sinister. Let me ask you, you've been to the police department today. You've been to the Children and Family Services people today. What did they tell you?
So police have been totally tight-lipped. We have not heard a thing from police since they had a press conference last week. We obviously saw them searching the last several days at the house, but today we have seen nothing. Of course, it's been frigidly cold here, below zero feel-like temperature, so perhaps they're sort of plotting their next move, but nothing from police. In terms of the state and the Department of Children and Families, Ashley, we've been trying to get in touch with them since last week. Emails, calls, text messages to the communications representatives, and we have just been flat out ignored. And you know how annoying as a reporter that can be. You at least expect some kind of response, at least acknowledging all of the calls and the emails that you've sent. So we decided today to drive out of Manchester to Concord, to the capital here in New Hampshire, where their base is, where their home base is, went inside, tried to talk to someone, and that actually led to them finally sending us a statement. Let me read it to you, Ashley. It says, "The department is continually reviewing its processes to ensure the best possible outcomes for children and families. The Division for Children, Youth, and Families has conducted a preliminary internal review on this case, and as is the case, whenever a critical incident involving a child occurs, a comprehensive quality assurance review is completed." So basically what they're saying is they're going behind the scenes and trying to figure out what happened here, because they were supposed to be keeping track of Harmony. How did she disappear 2 years ago?
Yeah, amen to that question. All right, Brian, thank you. I'm just going to button that up by saying that Kayla Montgomery, who is the stepmom of little Montgomery, new charges today, still in connection with the welfare fraud allegations. And then also $100,000, the reward has now ticked up in price. So hopefully, Brian, that will lead to some news in this story, and hopefully good news. And there'll be a bail hearing on Thursday for Kayla Montgomery, while Adam Montgomery, unlikely that he'll be sprung at all. All right, Brian, thank you. Please stay warm. I know it is freezing up there, so thank you for doing this job in a really uncomfortable climate. Brian Enten, live for us tonight. Still to come, one giant leap for people desperately in need of organ transplants and doctors who are powerless to help them. A near endless supply of healthy, available, made-to-fit organs may be in our future, with these guys leading the way. You know, it is a rare thing when science catches up to imagination, but that is exactly what happened in Maryland, and it is the medical equivalent of the moonshot. As we speak, a 57-year-old heart patient named Dave Bennett is making history with every beat of the heart he received on Friday. That's when Bennett became the first person anywhere to receive a heart from a pig. A pig that had been specially bred and genetically tweaked just for that purpose. Bennett only learned that he had end-stage heart disease last fall. That's severe arrhythmia that ruled him out for any artificial heart, which would have been temporary anyway. And he didn't qualify for a transplant, a normal transplant, you know, with a donated human heart. So that brought him to this man, Dr. Bartley Griffith at the University of Maryland.
He simply didn't want to die. Doesn't want to die. And he felt that if he had no opportunity, and he was pretty well convinced by multiple doctors who had told him he had a fatal disease and he was unlikely to leave the hospital because of it. With that as a background, as an alternative, he said to me two very important things. He said, I don't want to die. And he said, if I do, maybe you'll learn something to help others. And so I think that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, pretty cool indeed. Those others on Dave Bennett's mind. Let's just start with 107,000 people on the national transplant waiting list for hearts and lungs and kidneys, you name it. If this is an average day, 17 of them are going to die while they're waiting. Many, many more patients need new organs, but like Dave Bennett, they can't even make a list because they are too sick or they can't follow the protocols or any number of other reasons. If Bennett's transplant holds, if he survives long term, well, I'll let an expert tell us just what that could mean. Dr. Wayne Isom is the former chairman of the cardiac surgery at New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell Medical Center. He has worked with and trained some of the surgeons now on the front lines of what's called xenotransplantation. And some of his former patients are pretty famous. Bill Clinton, for one, David Letterman, Larry King. So you know those guys. Dr. Isom, welcome. This just seems like such a game changer. Am I overestimating it?
Actually, thank you for asking the question, but it is a game changer. And I've known Bartley Griffith ever since he's a resident, and he's fantastic. And he's been working on things like this, heart transplants, lung transplants, all his adult life. And my hats are off to him to finally do this. It's really, really
well. At what point,
major change?
You know, major change. At what point do we know that this is going to be a success? At what point in Dave's journey?
Well, I think you're just going to have to see how long this works. You know, in the early heart transplants, the problem was the rejection, and ultimately it became more acceptable once the immunotherapy was really accomplished. And now then, that's the big problem here. With xenografts or with pig hearts or hearts from an animal into a human, the immunology is really key to it. The logistics is about the same. The technical aspects are about the same. That's not the major component here. The major component is the logistics and getting the pig bred so that the recipient's body does not recognize it as a foreign body.
And so, as I understand it, you put it better than I do, the tweaking, the genetic tweaking of the pig is to get those hearts to be acceptable to the human body, which we did, I would assume, with pig valves. Is it sort of the progression from the pig valve?
Well, it sort of is. The pig valve is the same size, about the same size as the human valve, but the pig valve, we treat the pig valve so that we essentially kill the pig valve so it's not alive and put it in the human body. So and the human body does not recognize it as a foreign substance. But if you take the pig heart, it's got to be alive. It's got to be working. And then the human body is going to reject it. So the real key part is the immunology, the genetics, and the embryology of breeding that pig.
I'm so thankful for doctors like you guys. I mean, this is just such an amazing story. I can't wait to continue to follow this. And Dr. Isom, I can't thank you enough for helping me sort of navigate a pretty tricky subject. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Wow, just imagine. Okay, we will keep you updated on that story. And then I'm going to tell you about some other kind of medicine. A former Playboy playmate is just one of many women who are having their breast implants taken out, and the list is growing, but it may not be for the reason that you are thinking. We'll explain in a moment. noticed lately that the Hollywood Hills are getting a little smaller? I'm not talking geography here. I'm talking chest size. Because it is no secret that plastic surgeons have found L.A. to be the gift that keeps giving. Breast augmentation has been a booming business for decades, and not just in show business. But there has been a slight shift in that trend, a reversal, so to speak. A lot of celebrities are going public announcing they're removing all their fakeness, the implants, and they're flattening the curve. The reasons? Everything from excruciating pain to factory recalls and a trend to appear more natch. In a tidal wave of irony, it is the widow of Hugh Hefner, Crystal Hefner, of all people, a Playboy playmate, speaking out lately. She is one of many on the list that includes Chrissy Teigen and Victoria Beckham and Sharon Osbourne, among others, who have removed their breast implants, and they have said so out loud. Crystal has been open about the physical toll that the implants had taken on her body, and she posted this to her 3 million followers on Instagram on Monday. I grew my following during my Playboy years. Certain photos grow followings fast. In short, sex sells. I don't know whether I felt empowered by dressing scantily clad, showing cleavage, etc., or if I just felt it was expected of me. But now, modesty is what empowers me these days, and because it feels so much better internally, it will probably be this way for the rest of my life. I removed everything fake from my body and deleted all my old photos. I am more authentic, vulnerable, and feel that I belong more to myself. So after all these years of big breasts dominating the big screen, why is Hefner now part of an uptick in downsizing for women everywhere? Joining us now is Dr. Andrew Orden. He's a board-certified plastic surgeon and host of The Doctors. And also with us, Katie Bach. She is a telehealth attorney who had her implants removed and says she feels, quote, 1,000 times better the very next day. Welcome to both of you. So, Katie, first and foremost, why do you think it is that this trend is, the pendulum is just really swinging? Do you think it's the health issues, or do you think it's the fashion?
It's a good question. I think it's a combination of both. I think it's born of the advocacy that's been going on for decades with tens of thousands of women. It's a women's health issue that has received short shrift for decades and has been ignored. And now it's finally coming to light, I think, because of a cultural shift. When I first wanted implants at the age of 22, after I gave birth and the toll of pregnancy and breastfeeding took on my body, it was a culture of push-up bras and Baywatch, and that culture has obviously changed. And you could see I didn't need the implants, but that's not the conversation that was happening at the time. It was assumed if you wanted a lift, you'd get the implants.
You go. You make the appointment. You go. So, Dr. Orden, why is there a division, it seems, among even medical professionals about something called breast implant illness?
Yeah, well, first of all, Ashley, thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure. I'm a fan of the show. And to your point, yes, Baywatch was great for business, but we're seeing a big, big shift. And in my practice, I have to admit it's more a mature plastic surgeon's practice. I'm probably removing more implants these days than putting in new implants. And that's a dramatic shift that we're seeing compared to when I first went into practice. And as you alluded to, there's a number of reasons motivating patients to have their implants removed. And millions of women have had breast implants. The majority have done well. Chrissy has alluded to the fact tens of thousands have had problems. That's probably true. And it's, you know, a variety of problems. It can be pain, change in shape, firmness. Those are all known potential issues with breast implants. But lately, there's a new kid on the block, so-called BII, or breast implant illness. And, you know, is it real or is it not real? Well, it's not recognized as a discrete disease process, but as somebody who removes breast implants on a regular basis, I see patients dramatically feel better after having
it's amazing. Removed. You hear a lot of people talking about it publicly, which I think is so incredible. I want to keep covering this story as well because I'm fascinated by the trend, if not anything medical about it as well. But Dr. Orden and Katie Bach, thank you. Thank you both. Appreciate your candor.
All right. Thank you for having us both.
Awesome. All right. Well, the story continues as well. Okay. When we come back, he has risen to the top of broadcasting, all while performing brain surgery. A chance to chat with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, how you can make your appointment, coming up next.